Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us today. If you just tuned in, you've been listening to us already today. Thank you for that, too. My website is www.jbsba.com or jimblasingame.com, or if you like to type, here's the long one, smallbusinessadvocate.com. Either one of those will get you to a little bit of small business heaven where you can find out more about what we do, and including listening to the show in lots of different ways. After we've gone off the air live, you can listen to the replay, listen to the article, the archives, you can read articles. You can subscribe to my free newsletter, which comes out every week, which is where you might see me, see a piece that I've written in the past, and will continue to see me referencing some of the smart things that our guest this half hour has said and will continue to say. Ken Croson is our guest. He's an attorney and partner with Foley & Lardner out of Washington, D.C. He is an intellectual property attorney and a member of that organization's intellectual property department. Many of you have read articles that I've written about our intellectual property journey. You've heard me talk about Ken's work on this show before, where I've talked about some of the research that he has conducted, and I'm really excited about having him on the show because I want you to get the things that I've been saying about him. I want to get it out of his mouth. Ken Croson, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing great. It's good to have you here, and I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing that has enlightened me and hopefully enlightened a lot of small business owners with regard to what I call our journey of intellectual property. Would you agree with me when I say that we are on and have been on a journey of intellectual property?
I agree with you completely, Jim. And what's interesting is that if you think of the journey as being one on a train, it seems like the train is increasing in speed as each year goes by.
Right. I actually mark the journey's beginning, really, or at least being kicked into high gear into a real journey, when with the invention of Mr. Gutenberg's press, and of course since then we know where it's gone, but it's really picked up speed in the last 25 years, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Today there are something like 350,000 patent applications per year that are being filed in the U.S. Patent Office. I would say that 20 years ago, the number was probably 50% of that.
Wow. Well, and that's a real burden, and that's a challenge for the government, isn't it?
Absolutely. One of the issues that the government is confronting now is how to fund and finance the growth in inventions and patent applications that are being filed with the Patent Office. I'm not sure whether you're aware of this or not, but for many years now, the Patent Office has charged what are called user fees to patent applicants so that they can help defray the costs of the patent examination process. And as it turns out, those fees are designed to make sure that the Patent Office is really independently funded. But what's happened for a number of years is that the politicians have decided to divert some of that money to.
They've raided it, haven't they?
They've raided it, and much to the dismay of the intellectual property attorneys like myself, the inventors groups, and so forth. We all just think it's absolutely wrong, and that.
But now wait, you're being kind of naive there, Ken, because they've already taken $2 or $3 trillion out of the Social Security fund. Why should you guys be, you know, get a pass when all the rest of us have been getting our money looted by the politicians? No, heavy on the sarcasm there, you might note.
Well, you're right. In the magnitude of Social Security borrowings, I'll use that term, has been probably 100 times worse than in the for the inventors, and the publicity in the Social Security area has been much greater than in intellectual property. But I think it's important for your listeners to understand that this is something that really does a disservice to our economy and the progress that we're trying to make in this area.
Well, but it also highlights the the addiction that our politicians have to this drug, you know, this money that's coming in, which is basically a drug for them. And it's, it gives them an opportunity to, you know, to spend that money. And if there's any money laying around, it's like they're, you know, it's like they're crackheads or something. You know, they pick up a $5 bill on the street. I shouldn't say it that way. That's probably too harsh, but it does irritate me when I think about what you're telling me about, what you're telling us about how they basically looted the patent office's funds to diminish their ability to do their jobs. Ken, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, Ken was talking about all the patents, but you and I aren't as likely to have a patent, but we are likely, and not likely, but we absolutely have intellectual property. So we're going to talk about different kinds of intellectual property beyond patents right after these messages. Ken Croson is our guest. He's an attorney at Foley & Lardner. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'll be right back. We're back at 17-2. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and having a great visit with our friend Kenneth Croson. Ken, you know, Ken, you're a new friend. It's the first time on the show. We've only just gotten to know each other, but I feel like we're old friends because I've been talking about your work for so long. I really do feel like you're an old friend, and I want to talk about the different kinds of intellectual property, not just patents, because I know small business owners, you know, a lot of them have patents, but most of them don't. But we do have intellectual property, so I want to make sure that we sort of widen our brush, you know, broaden our brush a little bit when we talk about these things. But I really would like for you to talk to us about the research that you've done that I've talked about on this show. But I'd like for it to come out of your mouth about how the assets of corporations have inverted, really, from heavy on the tangible assets, things you can kick and move and have serial numbers, to intellectual property, to intangible assets like patents, like systems, like software, that kind of thing. How that's really has changed over the last 25 years. Would you talk to us about that, please?
Okay, Jim, before I do that, let me just answer your first question. In addition to patents, there are a number of other types of intellectual property rights. There's, of course, copyrights, mm-hmm. which cover the written expression, works of art, sculpture, and those kinds of things.
Music.
Software, music, of course, mm-hmm. is covered by a copyright. And then there are trade secrets, which are ideas which may or may not be patentable, but which are kept secret by the developer. And then a fourth category is trademarks. Trademarks mm-hmm. are considered to be an intellectual property right. So trademarks, of course, cover the use of a name or symbol to associate a particular product or service with a provider of that product or service.
And every single company that doesn't have a patent has the other three. Everybody does. Every company has their own proprietary systems. They have their trade secrets. But the thing is, Ken, is it may even be a secret to them because they're not really even thinking about it, the advantage that they have.
That's right. And one of the problems that companies have that have those trade secret rights is that they really have to understand how those rights can evaporate literally overnight.
Right.
If one of their employees walks out the door mm-hmm. and the next day sets up shop around the corner, their trade secret rights may have walked out the door too.
That's exactly why I spend so much time on this, Ken, and why you're here today is to help small business owners understand that they've got power, especially, and I think that it's been this evolutionary journey that we've been on, I think has been so gradual, although it's heated up in the last few years, it's sped up in the last few years, it's been so gradual that we've created these things, and I think a lot of times small business owners have created things that they think everybody else has, and they don't realize that maybe some of the stuff that they've created is pretty unique to them, and it gives them a competitive advantage, and as you say, they need to identify it, and they need to learn how to secure it and defend it, don't they?
Absolutely. All right. Then, with respect to your the second part of your question, which mm-hmm. is how has this come about that we've gone to a situation where 1978 we had 80% of a corporation's assets in tangible things like buildings, equipment, and so forth.
Inventory, that kind of thing.
Inventory to recent times where the ratio is flipped. I think the answer to that is what you've been talking about, and that is the intellectual property or intellectual capital of corporations has really become their valuable asset, because that's what they really have to offer the world. If you talk about, for example, a trademark right, you think about how companies with well-known trademarks are able to succeed in the marketplace because people will gravitate to their products because of the trademark rights and the trademark usage and the accepted quality that goes along with the trademarks.
Look at Nike. Nike is a classic example, it seems to me, Ken, of this, because, I mean, Nike doesn't actually make anything, do they? I mean, they outsource. They have other people make their shoes and their golf balls and things. I mean, to my knowledge, I mean, they may have some, but most of the stuff that they make, that they sell, they don't make. But they've developed this trademark, this brand, and the intellectual property to pull all that together to execute, haven't they?
That's my understanding, Jim, that, you know, like a lot of other companies, they're having their products made offshore, and then they're putting their logo, their Nike Swish logo on there, and people understand that that's a Nike product, and will buy it because of that logo and that that name.
The power of that logo, of that intellectual property, which is what the logo is. It's all part of their brand.
Right.
So now you say in the modern time that companies are more likely to leverage a majority of the assets that they leverage are intellectual assets, and less than half are, maybe as low as 20%, are tangible, right?
That's correct. Let me go back a second to the trademark issue we were just talking about, because I think it's interesting. Having been in this business a long time, what I find is that when clients come to me sometimes, they want to put a trademark on a product that basically just describes what the product is. And I say to them, why do you want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about some of the most famous trademarks, some of the ones that are most recognizable, they have nothing to do with identifying a particular product, a Xerox or a Nike.
Right.
Or, you know, there are many, you know, a Google.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's a Google? So I think that your listeners ought to keep in mind that in the trademark area, it's more important to come up with something that is catchy. And
it's intuitive.
People will, once they get it, they will associate it with a particular source.
Right.
Now,
Ken, hold on to that thought. We've got to take a quick break. We've got to sell some things. Right after these messages, we'll be back. I'm going to get Ken to help us with some more intellectual property issues. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Kenneth Croson is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. His name is K-R-O-S-I-N. And Kenneth E. Croson, and Kenneth, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate this. I hope you'll come back another day, because I got a lot more questions to ask you. You're a great wealth of information along these lines. My audience knows that one of my soapboxes is these days is getting them to think more about leveraging intellectual property more and less, and leveraging fixed assets less. And I want to talk about how small business owners can do this. I ask, sometimes when I give a speech, I ask the audience, would you rather, if I gave you two options, one is I would give you a free full big truckload of inventory, or I'd give you the information on how to deliver your inventory to your customers better, and this information, this system, would be something that nobody else has. Which would you take, the inventory or the information? And of course, if they take the inventory, they don't get it, in my opinion, about the way the marketplace is going relative to leveraging assets. The information is more powerful than that inventory. And I wanted to get you to share some of your thoughts on that for us.
Sure, Jim. You know, it sort of reminds me of the old saying about, you know, give a man a fish and he has food for a day, teach a man to fish and he has food for life.
Right.
It really kind of falls into that regime, because if you have the intellectual property, what that does is it gives you the ability to leverage things going forward. Intellectual property really gives you a property right that permits you to exclude other people from doing what you're doing for mm-hmm. a period of time if it's a patent or copyright, or indefinitely if it's a trade secret or trademark.
Look at Coca-Cola, for example.
That's right. And what you want to do is to be able to carve out a little bit of exclusivity to separate your company or yourself from the competition. So if you have something that you can offer to the public that gives you that exclusivity, or if you have the exclusivity that allows you to separate yourself from your competitors and get yourself ahead of the game, that's exactly what you want, and that's what intellectual property really is all about.
Well, there are two issues here, Ken. One is creating intellectual property, which a lot of small business owners are doing, whether they realize it or not, and the other is just simply leveraging intellectual property. And what I mean by that is there's also power in leveraging intellectual property that somebody else has created and will license to you.
Well, that's right. One of the topics that I've spent a lot of my professional life in is something called managing IP assets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very broad subject, but really the concept is the following. First of all, you've got to recognize, understand what your intellectual property assets are. And believe me, even though I say that, and it sounds like something simple, most companies do not understand what they have. The second thing is developing new intellectual property assets that in some way will be related to your business or your endeavors. And when I say developing intellectual property assets, that can include in-licensing technology that
right.
you don't already own. Sometimes it's easier, simpler, and less expensive to go and buy it or license it from somebody else. And the not invented here syndrome is something that should absolutely be rejected by companies.
Well, small businesses don't have that disease like big companies do. I can promise you that. Typically, they don't. But the other thing is, a lot of that licensed intellectual property can be customized for you and become exclusive in that customization, can it?
Absolutely. You know, the third thing that you know, you want to really be talking about is how to monetize those assets. And
right.
The monetizing really gets into this issue of, you know, how do you take those intellectual property assets, customize them for your business, and then use them to your advantage. I mean, these are, you know, very broad concepts, and I spent a lot of time in developing specific ways of doing this so that you can get from point A to point Z and monetize those assets in a way that will go right to your bottom line. Now, if you think about it...
Kenneth, pardon me. I got to stop you because we're running out of time. I've got a lot more questions to ask you. Will you come back another day?
Absolutely, Jim.
Well, let me ask you... Give us your website, please.
All right. I'm at... www.foley.com. That's my law firm's
Foley.com. Is that where we can find out some of your writings?
If you want to get a hold of me directly, if you go to that website, you can go drill down and you'll see my name and information. But my direct email address is kkrosin. At Foley.com.
Foley.com. Thank you, Ken, for being here. We'll get you back another day and talk about this some more.
Thank you very much,
Kenneth Croson, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.